Tonight we're beginning one of the most exciting journeys in Tanakh, the book of Ruth. And the book of Ruth has many starting points, like many great stories in Jewish history. The book of Ruth is the story of our past, it's the story of our present, it's the story of our future. Hashem was waiting for this great tzaddiket Ruth to come onto the scene. Hashem was waiting for David HaMelech to come to the world. And Hashem is still waiting for the continuation of David to come to the world. And the root of our Megillah is chesed, kindness. The Megillah, in passing, will tell us a few laws, but that's not the focus of the Megillah. The focus of the Megillah is kindness. As our sages said, we don't find in this Megillah, Amar Rabbi Zeira, HaMegillah Hazot. When you learn this Megillah, Ein La Lo Tumah Ve Lo Tara, you don't find laws of purity or defilement. Lo Yisur Ve Lo Eter, you don't find in this Megillah laws of what's prohibited or permissible. Lama Nichteva, what's the purpose of this Megillah? Lelamedcha Kama Matan Secharan Negomlei Chasadim. One has to learn from this Megillah how much Hashem repays those that do acts of kindness. Kindness. Our Megillah is all about kindness. And so when we look in the Torah for kindness, so kindness is a recurring theme from the beginning of creation. Hashem takes care of Adam and Eve and gives them clothing. Hashem takes care of all of humanity. He saves Noah. Avram is the father of kindness. Kindness is a theme of Torah throughout. But there are other themes we should notice in our Megillah. One of the most powerful themes is the theme of a ger. Most of our class here is either undergoing or has undergone the gear process. This is the Megillah you guys should learn and learn again and learn again. And we will touch on so many points. You will see that the story of the convert is recounted in the Megillah with so much insight. And perhaps over here, we can mention the Shla Kadosh. We met this Shla in Rav Chalap. However, recently I came across the concept in the Shla Kadosh. I don't learn Shla regularly. However, I was looking for something else and this came up. So the Shla Kadosh writes that the Jewish people have a certain amount of light and a certain amount of strength. And when they have to take a leap forward, that's when they need a ger. Someone from the outside could bring a light that we can't develop from the inside. Rabbi Meir came from converts. Rabbi Akiva came from converts. David HaMelech came from converts. When the Jewish people have to take a leap forward, there's a light that comes from the outside. But that light shines because a ger chooses to shine his own light. And I will explain. A teacher came before his class and he said, I want to show you a lesson you should take your whole lifetime with you. He takes an easel, he puts it up against the wall. He takes a big square of white paper, puts it on the easel. And then he takes a paintbrush, dips it in black ink, puts the paintbrush smack center of the piece of paper and there's this big black blob of paint. And then he starts drawing circles. And the circles grow ever wider. And as he's going around the page, the paint finishes on the paintbrush until he reaches the edges of the paintbrush and the edges of the page. And there are wisps of black all around the edges. His largest circle, you could barely see the wisps of black. And he says to the students, now, question number one. Where is there the most light on the page? So one student points to the upper left corner, the other student points to the upper right corner. They're pointing to the places where you didn't get the black ink on. And then the student, and then the teacher asks them, now where is there the least light? And they all point dead center to the black dot. He says, now watch. And he flicks a switch, and there behind the center of the page, he has a light bulb that turns on, and there's a beaming light shining out of the black dot. And he says to them, you see, That's where there's real light. You all got it wrong. So what do all the students go? Big deal. He says, no. I want to explain to you where your mistake was. You didn't point to light. You pointed to the reflection of light. Where you see white is where light is reflected. Where you see black is where no light is reflected. But when I turned on a light, that's when you saw light. Now I want to tell you something about life. As we go through life, we reflect light. There are people who tell us you're great. There are people who tell us you're wonderful. There are people who tell us you saved my life. I look up to you. There are all kinds of amazing compliments we get, and we need them. And they give us strength, and they're important. But that is when we reflect light. And then there are moments in life where people tell us you're horrible. You're terrible. What you're doing is wrong. I think you're destroying your life. I think you're destroying your children's life. I think what you're doing is destructive. If I ever thought to look up to you, now I look down at you. There are moments where we do what's right, and it is at those moments sometimes where we do the thing that is most right, where we have so little light to reflect. We have opportunities in our life where we have to stand up for what's right, yet the whole world is not shining a light at us. And it is at that moment that we have to choose whether we will turn on our internal light. All of life we have the pleasant time of, we have this advantage of being able to reflect light. People all around us are saying positive things. But then crunch time comes. We meet moments in our life where we have to do what's right, even though everyone around us is against it. Even though we find that the people we'd like to be supporting what's right are standing against it. And it is at that moment that we choose whether we will turn on our light. The story of Megillat Rut is the story of a woman who was looked down upon. Rut enters the Jewish people and she's from the enemy. I remember Rav Dinkevich called me a number of years ago. He said to me, there's a girl I'd like you to set up. She's an amazing girl. She ran away from her family. She comes from a family of terrorists in Gaza, and she decided to convert to Judaism. And there's a price tag on her head. She's in hiding. But she's a true convert. And she needs a shidduch. She's been studying by us. So I said, okay. And the young lady calls me up. And I answer the phone, and I hear a thick, thick Arab accent on the other side of the phone. And she's speaking to me, and what I'm hearing is such a thick Arabic accent. I stopped for a minute, and I reminded myself what this is all about, and I started conducting the interview. I'm starting to take down her details. And throughout the interview, I keep feeling like I'm talking to an Arab. And then I caught myself and I said, what's wrong with me? She's a tzaddikas. She has everything right about her. We don't get to choose where we're born. We get to choose what we'll do with our life. We don't get to choose where we're born, how we're born. What? Who has a choice about that? I chose whether I'd be born Jewish or not. So here you have the most fantastic tzaddik, and everywhere she goes, she has a hardship. Ruth comes into the Jewish people, and they look at her. She's from the enemy, as we will see in a few minutes. Her descendant, David, his own family says, stay away. They think he's a bastard. They think he's a mamzer. Throughout David's life, people go out against him. And not simple people, the heads of the court. Could you imagine? You're trying to do what's right, you're trying to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam, and the chief rabbi of Israel comes on public television and says, everyone should know, this person is a horrible person. Imagine if in front of all your friends, the leading rabbi would get up and say, this person will burn in hell. Because that's what happened to David. He found Doig, he found Shimi ben Gera. These were the top rabbis, the heads of the court. And what did they say about him? Doiga Domi said, no one's allowed to marry him. He's not even a kosher Jew. Stay away from that man. Shimi ben Gera says, Isha Damim the Isha Belial. He stands in front of David's men and he says to David, you're a murderer and you're a person who has no fear of heaven. Now that he's not getting that rebuke from a small person. Who's talking to him that way? A man with a long white beard, very respected. He's the chief rabbi of Israel. He's the head of the Jewish court. He's no small person. And what does David say to his men? Must be God told him to tell me that. How do you live with the reality that the leading people of the time are against you? Achitofel, the biggest Talmud Chacham Achitofel. What does he have to say about David? Kill him. How do you live in a world where the leaders of the world and the pious people, or at least so they seem, are against you? And they say you're wrong. Not only they say you're wrong, they say kill him. It's not about give him the better aliyah, give him the worse aliyah. It's about kill him. They join a rebellion. They tell his son Avshalom, violate your father's concubines. And David has to live a lifetime of this reality where the people who should have been on his side, the people who should have been his friends, turn on him again and again and again. His own nephew, who he appointed chief general, Yoav ben Tseruya, takes out a personal letter that David wrote to Yoav. And when he takes out that letter, he shows to everyone how David caused the death of Uriah Hiti. Why do David's men turn on him so many times? Because his own men turned on him. Whether David was right or wrong, Yoav brought upon David the hatred of his own men. So David has to live a lifetime where who's on his side? Is it any wonder that David says, Ani amalti vechovzi, as I was on the run, I said, Kol adam kozev, everyone's a liar. Can't trust anyone. So how does David sing songs of praise? How is David a positive person? Because he knew he had to shine his own light. When a person knows I'm going the way of Hashem, a person checks himself over and over again. David didn't get judged by the people who decided to judge him. David went to his Rabbeim and asked, am I right or am I wrong? So Irai Yairi came over to David and said, on this you're wrong. David says, why is my own son rebelling against me? So his Rabbi says to him, you should not have married his mother. That was a mistake. David said, I thought it was a mitzvah to marry her. She was a woman of beauty at a time of war. Isn't there a mitzvah to marry her? So he said, no, you didn't understand the mitzvah right. The Torah said, if you can't hold back, if she took you with her beauty, you're allowed to do it. But the Torah tells you, you're going to do it. Your son will rebel against you. You did it. Okay, now you're paying. Yeah. So David has his Rebbeim. And when he goes to his Rebbeim, he sometimes gets hit over the head. Natan HaNavi rebukes him. Irai Yairi rebukes him. Gad HaChoze rebukes him. But they tell him, stick with it. And Chazal tell us, every person needs to try to find the Rebbe that will give him over the head when he needs to get over the head, but will help him pull him up and won't let him fall. We all need a Rebbe that believes in us in our worst day. That was one good piece of advice we once received from Dr. Weiss. He said to us, find a Rebbe who you can come to on your worst day. Because we all need, the Medrash says, we all have times that we fall, we need someone to pull us up. But we also need to know that our greatest moments in life are those moments where we know what's right and we stand up for what's right, even though it's hard. And even though everyone around us is pointing the other direction. Rav Nevenzel once told me a rule. He said to me, you should know that when you stand up for what's right, ultimately you look back and see that only good came from it. But at the moment you don't see it. That's the test of the moment. At the moment you have to stand up for what's right and you feel like you might lose everything you've built because you're standing up for what's right. And that is the story of Ruth. That is the story of David. It's the story of people who did everything to do what's right. They tried, and they were willing to pay prices for it. And in the end, their story turns out somewhat positive and very painful. We don't live in a world where you just enter that, they lived happily ever after, now everything works out right. No. Hashem gave us a world where we work and we keep helping the world move forward, and at the same time we realize that there are prices that are paid in the interim. David HaMelech does lose his 10 concubines, so it's a punishment, but he loses. It's painful. Ruth is not going to have an easy life. She will merit to see the fruits of her labors. It's not easy. And yet, Ruth teaches us the concept of kindness. Kindness. Ruth and Naomi and Boaz. And so our story begins in a cave. Our story begins in a cave. If we go back, the year is 2000. 2000 years after creation. Abraham recognizes his creator. He is 52 years old. They try to burn him at the stake, and a miracle comes out. He walks out unscathed. His brother says, I'll do the same thing. And his brother only does it after he sees the miracle and he gets burnt at the stake, his brother Haran. And then his nephew and his niece, Lot and Sarah, they're youngsters. Avram takes them and he marries Sarah, his niece, and he adopts Lot as his younger brother. And 18 years later, the year is 2018, Abraham ascends to the land of Israel. And he has the visions that he will get the land of Israel. He returns to Haran, and 5 years later Hashem appears to him and tells him, Lech Lecha, go back to Israel. That's where you will be able to educate people. He comes to Israel, and for the first time in world history there's a famine. God just promised him things would go well, smackingly well. Boom, not what he expected. He has to leave. He descends to Egypt. His wife is abducted. When his wife is abducted, he says to the Pharaoh, she's my sister. Lot, who loves money. The poor orphan loves money, Lot. And he sees how Avram repeatedly says, she's my sister, she's my sister. He gets a lot of gifts from the king. And Lot keeps his tongue, even though he really wants to say, she's really my sister. And it's very hard for Lot to be quiet because he sees Avram's getting all wealthy by saying she's my sister, and Lot keeps silent. And so Hashem rewards Lot, and Lot himself becomes wealthy. Lot himself becomes wealthy, and they return to Israel. So we're holding the year 2018. They return to the land of Israel. Lot's shepherds are already taking everyone's crops. They don't mind. They say, believe in God. God promised the land to Avram. Must be he meant Lot, because Avram has no kids. Lot is going to be the heir. And Avram tells Lot, we can't continue like this. So Lot says, there are pretty girls out in Sodom. I go where there are pretty girls. And he takes his family, he goes to Sodom and he marries a Sodomite woman. And our sages say he went there because he was into women. And so Lot goes out there. War breaks out. Lot gets abducted by the four kings, and Avram comes and saves him. 25 years will pass. The year is now 2043. Avram is how old? Avram is already 100 years old. And on that year, Sodom is overturned. And Lot and his daughters run into a cave. And his daughters think, the world's gone. And here we have the first act of kindness. The daughters are repulsed by the idea of sleeping with their father. But they imagine that the only way they could continue the world is by being intimate with their father. So they give him to drink, and they sleep with him, the older one, the younger one. And from this comes two people, Ammon and Moab, the two nations, Ammon and Moab. So the two nations, Ammon and Moab, are rooted in a certain responsibility, in a pious act. The two daughters did a hideous act, but they did it with pious intent. They thought this was what Hashem wanted from them. And here we have a concept that is a recurring theme in our history, that whenever something amazingly good comes to the world, it's as though it can only come through something that seems hideous. It can only come through something that you're repulsed when you hear about it. And our next story, here we have the beginning of the Moabite people, and from this will come Ruth. We will get up to Ruth shortly. We fast forward a number of years, and we're up to the year. It is shortly, approximately a decade before we descend to Egypt, right? Yosef is in Egypt already for over a decade, and Yehuda lost his two sons, and then he lost his wife, and he's on his way to shear his sheep, and a very pious woman tries to seduce him. She's wearing a mask. She's wearing like the Arab veil. Vateshev befetach inayim. She sat in a place where all you saw were the slit of her eyes, the way the Arabs wear their, I don't know what they call that head garb. And she makes believe she's a woman of ill repute. The women of ill repute of the time used to cover their faces because the people who hired them, it was better for them not to know who they were hiring. Because sometimes people didn't realize they were taking someone of their own family. So the women of ill repute would cover their faces that way. And Yehuda goes with her. What a story! Excuse me! Holy people! Doesn't sound like such a holy act! Our sages give us all kinds of stories. They tell us Yehuda was approached by an angel who didn't let him pass. Yehuda was overtaken with a desire he couldn't overcome. Tamar knew that Mashiach had to come from this. Our sages give us a lot of background to the story. But at the end of the day, you look at the story and you say, huh? You look at the story and you say, what good can come of this? And this is the recurring theme of our history. We have to know that good can come from everything. When Yeshu is pushed away by his Rebbe, and he gets the feeling that there's no good that can come from you, that's when we have the terrible beginning of our bloody history with Yeshu and his disciples. When Amalek's grandmother, Timna, is pushed off by Avraham Avinu, and she gets the feeling, nothing good can come of you, that's when we have the greatest ills of Jewish history. Amalek comes from that. Our sages say, even when someone's wrong, we don't push them away with two hands. We believe that from everything can come light. From the deepest, darkest act, where you tell yourself, that's terrible. And our sages say, no. Even the most terrible thing, you should know, good things can come from that. From Amalek came great sages. From Haman. Our sages say the descendants of Haman who tried to annihilate the Jews were big Talmidei Chachamim. And that's a concept that again is rooted in Megillat Rut. This idea that there is light. It's a human choice to be a light. And when we make that choice, then our history can't limit us. We can shine and shine and shine. And what you can't shine, your kids will shine. Yes. Yes. They're also allowed to convert. Everyone's allowed to convert. There's no one who can't convert. The question is who they could marry after they convert. But everyone's allowed to convert. That's why it's wrong to say Judaism is racism. Everyone's welcome.
Why do they say about Amon Moab not converting to Amalek? There was anyway.
Everyone can convert. There's a question of who they could marry after they convert. Do they have to marry someone like themselves? Can they marry everyone else? That's another question.
So what is the question about David?
I didn't understand.
Sorry. There was something to do with the lineage that they were questioning.
We'll get there.
Okay.
We'll get there.
Fair enough.
Okay. Rav, you mentioned the idea that something great comes from something hideous. Like, this is like a rule? Because...
Isn't this like...
Is this like a rule?
The rule is that we don't judge. Our approach is that good is a potential that's waiting to come to the world. Always make room for it. Don't say because he's from there. You know how many converts we had from Germany? So what? So his grandfather was A or B or C. What difference does it make? So because a person's grandfather was a neo-Nazi or a Nazi, so he can't be a tzaddik? He could be a tzaddik. His responsibility is to be a tzaddik. We had students who knew their parents or grandparents were Nazis. So what? That only makes their act greater. Kol hakavod to them. Now they have to become great people. Again, why am I not their descendant? Did I have a choice? What credit can we take? So far we covered the story of the history of Ammon and Moab, the story of Yehuda and Tamar. We'll fast forward 210 years, 250 years. We leave Egypt. And the year is 2488. We're about to enter the land of Israel. And we approach Moabite territory. Moabites are on the east of the land of Israel. They're approximately where Jordan is today. And Hashem tells us, don't attack Ammon and Moab. Hashem says, I have a beautiful thing that's still supposed to come from the Moabites named Ruth. So don't attack the whole Moabite people because of Ruth. So we don't attack. And then the Moabite king calls in Bilam, the sorcerer, and he offers many sacrifices. And he wants to curse the Jewish people. And he doesn't succeed. But he brings sacrifices to Hashem. And his descendant is going to be Ruth. Ruth, Chazal tell us, was the descendant of Eglon. And also the descendant of Balak.
Eglon?
We'll get to Eglon in a minute. Balak's grandson, we will fast forward another few years, and after Balak, the king of Moab, summons Bilam to curse the Jews, and it doesn't work. Balak, later on, his grandson is king over the Moabites. We have already settled the land of Israel. And our leader is Ehud ben Geira. So we're holding approximately the year 2588. Maybe a little earlier, 2548. So it's about 100 years after we left Egypt. It's about 60 years into our period in the land of Israel. And our shofet, our leader, is Ehud ben Geira. And the Moabites, under the leadership of Eglon, who is the grandson of Balak, they come in and they conquer Israel. And they tax us, and they oppress us. And Ehud comes with a delegation to bring gifts to Eglon, the Moabite king. He sends the delegation back, and he has soldiers prepared to join him in an attack. And then he alone returns to Eglon. Eglon is a very corpulent person. He's sitting, he's always sweating because he's so big, and he's sitting in a special room up on top where there's a breeze, and Ehud comes and tells him, I have a secret message for you from Hashem. So Eglon says, oh, it's a secret, get everyone out of the room. And then he says, Hashem sent me with a message to you. So Eglon gets up off his chair in honor of a message from Hashem. As he's getting up, Ehud whisks out his blade and he thrusts it into the stomach of Eglon and assassinates Eglon. He leaves the room and locks the door and rushes back to Israel and leads the war, which is victorious against the Moabites. And with that, we remove the Moabite oppression from Israel. Eglon, the grandson of Balak, was the father of Ruth. According to one opinion, he was the grandfather of Ruth. If we say he was father or grandfather of Ruth, then Ruth grew up in a house where they weren't too fond of Jews. And it also places our story in the beginning of the period of the judges. We have multiple opinions among our sages. When did this story take place? Did the story take place in the very beginning of the era of the judges, in the days of Barak and Devorah? Did the story take place in the days of Shamgar ben Anat and Ehud ben Gera? And that would make Ruth a minor, the daughter of Eglon. During our story, her father gets assassinated and she marries into a Jewish family. Did our story take place the way it's commonly accepted at the end of the era of judges, and the judge Ivtzan is in fact Boaz? So that's the most widely known opinion, that Ivtzan was Boaz, and that our story took place at the end of the era of the judges. However, there are two other opinions as to when the story took place. So we begin our story. You're all invited to open your Megillat Ruth. Every verse in Megillat Ruth will open with the letter Vav, except for 8. There are only 8 psukim in the whole Megillah that don't begin with the letter Vav, and that is because she connected to the covenant of the Jewish people, the covenant which we seal on the 8th day. Today is Monday. Okay, we will pause for a few minutes.